Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening and welcome to the Tattered Cover, and thank you all for coming tonight on this snowy, cold night. We're just excited to have you here, and we're, of course, very excited to have Kim Harrison here with her new book, Ever After. Ever After is the 11th book in the Hollow series, and Rachel Morgan, witch-turned-daywalking demon, is back. She's back to fix the Ever After before the fragile balance between magic users and humans is destroyed. Kim Harrison was born and raised in Michigan, and after recent years of living in South Carolina, has chosen to move back to her home state because she missed the snow. Yeah, Kim Harrison has written, besides the Hollow series, The Hollow's Insider and Into the Woods, a compilation of shorts and novellas from the Hollows. And we have all her books up here also. She's also written two graphic novels, Blood Work and Blood Crime, and, of course, the best-selling Madison Avery series for young adults, including Once Dead, Twice Shy, and Early to Death, Early to Rise, and Something Deadly This Way Comes. Now, will you please join me in welcoming Kim Harris?
Hi, guys. Okay. I am going to read page 209. I think that's it. 209. Yep. Sort of down by the bottom if you want to read along. Just to set this up a little bit, it's really hard to find a passage that I think really kind of encapsulates the whole feeling of the book. It's still kind of fast-paced a little bit and doesn't give away too many spoilers. Well, as you can see, we're about halfway through the book at this point, so it will not be spoiler-free. It's more like a teaser, though. Every time I read this, I can hear people go, ooh, when I get to this one part, and it's like, don't worry about it. I did not ruin the book, if you haven't read it. Trust me on that. And just to set it up a little bit, Rachel is in the church. She has had a major freak out. And Trent has come over, actually, and has calmed her down, which is kind of interesting, which is why I want to read this part. He's about ready to leave, and she's following him to the door. Standing there in the dim glow of the light over the pool table, he hesitated. Can I ask you something? Sure. Hands in his pockets, Trent looked totally unlike himself. What would you have done with Dr. Farron? My smile faded. Your geneticist? The one you killed? He nodded, opening the door to let a chill spring night breeze eddy about my ankles. Now that you know everything, what hung in the balance, what was at stake, how would you have stopped him from going to the press and bringing about the end of everything that you'd spent your life trying to save? Life imprisonment, such as a demon demands? Bribe him with even greater wealth, knowing you'll forever be a slave? Or would you end it cleanly? Kill one greedy man to save thousands, maybe millions, from suffering. My mouth was dry, and I didn't know what to do with my hands. I don't know, I finally said, and he nodded, deep in thought. That's a fair answer, he said lightly. I'd wondered if you'd given it any thought to the decisions that I make and the possible reasons why. I stared at him, thoughts racing through me. I didn't know what to think anymore. His expression blanked, and my sadness began to creep back. I knew where his thoughts had gone. I'm sorry about Biss, he said. I know it hurts. And yet, I managed to smile. He did know. He knew the guilt, the panic, and the strength it took to focus that energy on finding a way out. Thank you, I said, refusing to cry in front of him again. He smelled like rain and leather over the scent of his aftershave, and my throat tightened and my vision threatened to swim again. I'm sorry about Siri and Lucy. I don't know how you can keep moving forward. His eyes rose from my burned hand, and he unexpectedly tucked a strand of hair behind my ear, shocking me. You were the one who taught me any chance is viable. If I didn't believe that, I would be a total wreck. I know it hurts. Forgive me for my choices, maybe? Was he going to try to kiss me? I didn't know how I felt about that anymore. I did that a long time ago, I said. Eyes holding an unreadable emotion, he hesitated, his attention running over my snarly hair. Down, I think, he whispered, and making a sharp nod, he turned away. I backed up, shoulder knocking the doorframe as I misjudged and stumbled inside. Embarrassed, I shut the door before he found the sidewalk, but I watched him get into his car from one of the sanctuary's windows, his form blurry and wavy. Jinx's wings were a familiar brush of sound as he landed on my shoulder, and together we watched Trent's car lights flicker to life. What did he mean by that? I said, feeling alone even as I could still smell him in my church. Jinx's wings shifted fitfully. I don't know. Trent drove away, and I tried to look at Jinx on my shoulder, failing. You called him, I accused. You asked him to come over. Red dust pooled down my front. He was coming into Cincy to talk to his lawyer, the pixie hedged. I called him, yeah. I thought he might be able to help. It worked, didn't it? You're thinking again, right? I turned back to the window, staring out at the night-emptied street. Uh-huh. With Ivy gone, you need someone to ground you, Rach, and I'm not big enough to slap you. I thought back to my frantic, useless state. He was right. Sorry. Don't worry about it. Feel better? I put my burnt hand on the window, the cool, blood-red glass soothing to my fingertips. Slowly, I nodded. Trent had grounded me. How about that? The hot chocolate and donuts were his idea, though, Jinx said, and then darted off to tend his children. Thank you. Okay. My favorite part is the Q&A. I'm usually not behind a podium, but I'll make do. All right. Oh, we have one already. Yes.
Do you ever find it kind of tiring to write so much about same set of characters in the same universe?
Do I find it tiring to write about
the same group
of people? Over and over for 11 books. No, not at all. No, actually, I don't want to say it's tiring, but I have to keep finding new ways to have Rachel grow and evolve. And when I hit that wall, which is coming up in book 13, I'm ready to do something new. I am so ready to do something new. Unfortunately, one of the problems with being a published author is that you're no longer free to just write whatever you want, and then if you're tired of it, start something new. And then when you get tired of that, start something new. You have a contract, and you have deadlines, and you have obligations, and it's up to the writer to maintain interest in what they're doing. Because if you're not if the author's not interested in it, then the reader isn't either. So, yes, there will be a point when I'm tired of writing Rachel. I'm just about there.
We're not.
No, you're not? You're not? Oh, I do have some ideas for what comes next. Some of them are in the Into the Woods. Okay, would you please display it for us? Thank you. That's my husband, Tim. He's the only one who gets away with that. Yes, he's my Vanna. He does a very good Vanna. Into the Woods actually has all the previously published shorts and novellas from the Hollow. So if you're looking to find out what you've missed in the mass markets and whatnot, that's where it is. There's also about 300 pages of brand new stuff. I took a summer off to develop not a synopsis or whatever, but I developed full-blown ideas and stories for my editor of what I might want to do after the Hollows. Those are in there, too. So if you're curious about what might come next, it might be that, or it might be something completely different, because I kind of wrote a manuscript I didn't tell my editor about, and it's really cool. And so it might be that. Okay, next question. Yeah. What does burnt amber taste and smell like? It's horrible. I actually, I didn't know when I first started writing the books. I just kind of extrapolated out what it might smell like, but I got a hold of a piece of amber and I burnt it, and it reeks. It smells. It's like burnt pine, and not in a good way. It's really bad. Well, because amber is sap, basically. Yeah, it's nasty. Okay. Any more questions? Yeah. What happened to CW? I'm glad you asked. Last year, I stood up during the tour on these podiums, and I did the happy author dance because CW had bought the rights. They have since passed on it, pretty much. I have my rights back again. CW, it was supposed to be for the 2012-2013 season, and they developed it to the point where they were writing the pilot, and then they got distracted, as Hollywood always does. No, it's okay. It really is okay. Trust me on this. It's okay. You would not be happy they were going to take Jinx out. See what I'm saying? Okay. I feel vindicated. You would not have been very happy. I would have been an ambassador, you know, for years saying, no, really, it's okay. Look what they're doing. But they were going to take Jinx out. And really, he's the heart. Yeah, he's the heart of the story. But anyway, I've got the rights back. That was part of the deal, is that I was not going to give them up if they were just going to sit in a drawer. I wanted them back right away if they weren't going to act on them. And they didn't. So I have my rights back. I'm a free girl. I'm at the party. I'm at the dance. I'm looking for a date.
You're not looking for a date.
Okay, I'm not looking for a date. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. Way in the back, yes. Now, you have to be very careful because they're going to mob you if you have a spoiler. I wish you would have phrased that differently. Could you ask me that up at the podium? Up at the signing table? Okay. All right, yes.
What type of events do you go to for fun?
What type of events do I go to for fun? Now, stop laughing. Contrary to what it might look like, I am a raging introvert. I am most happy when I am in my backyard or in my office or on a beach somewhere all by myself. I really don't go to a lot of events. I went to a couple of concerts, you know, the big rock concerts, and it was totally overwhelming. I mean, I loved it. I'm glad I did it. I'd never do it again, just simply because it's too much for me to process at that moment. But yeah, I really am very dull, seriously dull. That's why I have to write these fantastical things in order to keep myself entertained. Sure. When does the next one come out? We do not have a title for the next one. It is currently sitting on my publisher's desk. Hopefully I will have an edit letter shortly after I get done from tour. We are right on schedule for a year release. They bumped us up a month, which was very nice. I don't know if we're going to keep that January release date or if they're going to take me back to February. As much as I like being out in January, I think I'd rather like my February tour back. Yeah.
How did you get started? Did you throw a spell out there to get an agent to look at you?
Pretty much, yeah. It's called friendship, and yeah. How did I get my start, and how did I find my agent? Actually, if you want to go all the way back to the beginning, I did not take any writing classes whatsoever in college, in high school, just the bare minimums of what I needed. But I read, and I read, and I read, and I absorbed a lot of that. I didn't decide I wanted to write until, golly, almost 19 years ago. So I was in my late 20s? Late 20s? I think I was in my late 20s. Yeah, I was in my late 20s. Yeah, it's been a while. And I wrote on my own for a couple years, and then I had the great fortune to land in a fabulous writers group that you will never, ever find again. It was a once-in-a-lifetime group of dedicated writers. There was we met every week for like 2 hours, and it was fabulous. It was my Camelot. so to speak. In this group, there was a already published author, and she arranged that when we all went to a writer's conference, which if you're trying to get published, this is a great place to meet editors and agents. This is where they go for talent, to look for new talent, are writer workshops. Just Google writer workshop in your state, and it'll pull up a list. You go to them. You meet them, but this published author, she arranged a party and invited some editors and agents, and she literally, did I tell you I was an introvert? She literally dragged me off the couch and shoved me in front of this big, imposing man who was an editor or an agent, and he took a look at my work. And a couple weeks later, he asked me, will you do a rewrite? And I said, oh, yes. And after I delivered that rewrite, he took me on. And it was about another year after that that I first got published under Dawn Cook, which is more of a traditional fantasy. And that's it in a nutshell. A lot of work, though. If you want to be a writer, I suggest you treat it like a part-time job. I don't know any successful writer who only writes when they feel like it. They write every day, or at least on a regular schedule. In the gray, yes.
How much of yourself do you see in Rachel?
How much do I see of me in Rachel? Not a whole lot. The last thing in the world I'd want to do is live in a church with a vampire and a pixie and solve crimes. That is not high on my list. However, I would like to have a garden that, like she does. Rachel and I do share a few things. We both cannot stand bullies. We will both step out of our way out of our comfort zone when it comes to bullies. Fortunately, Rachel's growing up now, and we're both seeing shades of gray rather than black and white. Having said that, there's a lot of me in Trent. There's a lot of me in Big Al. Sorry, honey. There's a lot of me. There's, you know, that snarky jinx. Yeah, that's me. Although the quips come from him. Yeah, so if you're developing characters, take parts of yourself and take parts of people you know. It's more fun to develop a character rather than pick somebody out of the crowd or somebody you know and develop a character around them, because then you start expecting that person to act like your character, and that's not good at all. Yeah.
So Jinx, that's called the character. Did the quips come from your
husband? The quips I make, but the sarcastic attitude definitely comes from this guy. Yeah. I'm sorry, could you say that again? The title is a Clint movie. Yes, it's Hereafter. It's one of his new ones. He wasn't in it, but he directed it. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, in the back. Nope, you. Yep. Oh, have I given any thought to what my demon name would be if I put myself in the collective? Absolutely not. No, I have not thought about that, but that's a neat idea. I should do a quiz. Yeah. Now, there was somebody. Yes.
Do you actually have a recipe for the dead man's float?
Do I have a recipe for the dead man's float? I do. And it is in the Hollows Insider, which I don't know if... Is it there? Is it on the other side? Oh, there we go. Oh, there we go. Thank you, Tim. This is actually a very cool book. I wrote everything in it. I came up with everything in it. I had to reread the entire series up to date to pull out the spells and make sure I got them right. Dead Man's Float is in there. Mm-hmm. It is in there, and it glows in the dark, too. Yeah, the cover glows in the dark. That was my editor's idea. Way in the back, yes.
How did you come up with all of Jinx's kids?
How did I come up with all of Jinx's kids' names? Well, fortunately, they all had to start with a J, And I hit some real obvious ones right off with, you know, with bell on the end or make them sound kind of pixie-ish. Then I had to start thinking, well, let's see, I needed some masculine names. We'll just put a J in front of it, like take Mike and put Jamike or Jamoke or you know, so on and so forth. But yeah, I did my reread through the whole series, and I never read my work, but I had to read the whole series again. I was there writing down every single pixie's name I found, because I was not keeping track at all of anything. I will never do another one of these again. I had a lot of fun, but it was harder to put The Hollows and Cider together than any other book I've ever written. Yeah.
It seems, and stop me if I'm wrong, but it seems like maybe when you do something for a living, that things can kind of start to seem very mechanical. So I'm wondering if there's anything happening in the genre right now, regardless of the medium, that you're excited about.
I'm excited in that it's not dying. I think it's getting harder. No, really, it isn't. It's getting harder to sell vampires right now, and I think the editors and agents are sick of them. But if you have a really good one that has great characterization and takes it in a new place, they will snap it up. The genre as a whole right now, you can see this in other genres when that, you know, you get that big boost and then it kind of tapers off. I'm not sure where we are on that bell curve, but there are so many copycats and stories being written by people who really don't know the nuances of what makes a good story dealing with paranormals. There's a line, and you have to know when not to cross it. And it's hard if you haven't grown up reading fantasy or science fiction. It's subtle, but you know it when you read it, when they've gone too far. Yeah, you're nodding. So I think there's a glut of kind of like also-rans, so to speak. But the masters of the craft are going to keep producing. Also, the genre is still wide open, though, because it will encompass mystery, it can encompass thriller, it can encompass crime scene, it can encompass detection. And as we have people who are already, you know, very good at writing these start to enter the field, they bring their own brand, and that's always exciting. But as far as, you know, are gargoyles going to be hot next year? I have no clue. Yeah. Ah, when I'm writing Takata, who do I listen to? Crickets. I'm serious. I have found that when I'm developing stories or characters for the first go-round, I tend to listen to a lot of music. When I have the world in my head and I've got the characters in my head, I tend not to need that extra little push that music gives me. So I seriously have been listening to crickets. Is I've got an hour-long loop of crickets, yes. And
what sort of music?
Oh, probably the 80s bands, yes. Especially the old guys that are coming back now. Yeah, that's very cool. Is there anybody way in the back? Yes. I'll get you in a second. Yes, all the way in the back. Yes, in the black. Yes, you. Yes, you. No.
Is there any actual relationship or a connection between, say, Married with Children and a Lyrette and Rachel? And a guy named Pat?
I do not know how that happened, honestly. I really don't. That was not done on purpose. No. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if you could, you know, just for fun, like write like a spin-off out of any of the characters from The Hollows, who would you pick?
I would probably pick either David. Oh, the question was, if I was going to do a spin-off, what character would I follow? I would probably follow David because he is so cool. I mean, he really is. And if not him, it would be Glenn, who's out at Flagstaff. I mean, that I think that, and he's disillusioned with the fib. I mean, he's just ripe to just go and go is do his own thing. Yeah. Sure.
If you could have your favorite cast for a movie or TV show, who would play Jinx?
Oh, my gosh. Who would play Jinx if I had my dream cast? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I wish I could tell you. My readers, they come on to my website and they drop their own suggestions, and sometimes I look at that and they pick out some good people. But I really don't have a favorite. Are we good for time? One more? Okay. I don't.
Two more?
Okay, we'll start with you. Do I feel a certain loss when I take characters out of the storylines? Can I say no and not get booed? By the time I decide to take a character out of the storyline, it's not willy-nilly. I've looked at it. I've tried to extrapolate what they could do if I kept them in and what purpose they would serve. And if there's nothing and they're just taking up space, I regretfully will take them out and try to make their leaving the pages meaningful or at least helpful for another character to grow. That's why we lost Kistin. He couldn't help Rachel anymore. He was a great character. He was starting to grow in his own right, but he wasn't fitting in with my long-range plans. He wasn't even supposed to be there, to tell you the truth. Okay, one more. Okay, in the green, yes.
Besides music, what kind of inspiration do you get?
What kind of inspiration do I find to write besides music? It varies. It can be commercials a lot of times. Now, don't laugh. My hearing is going in my left ear, and my husband and I play a game where I say, did you really just say there's monkeys on the garage? And he'll say, no, I said I think I need a massage. And yet, in my head, I'm seeing monkeys on the garage. And so that sticks with me. And unfortunately, it does occasionally become inspiration. Now, for the climax of Ever After, I have found a very clear, this is where the idea came from for that. When you get to that point, take a look at an old science fiction cover. I think it's by Julian May. It's in the Golden Torek series. It's not ringing any bells. Pleistocene Earth, people sent back to Pleistocene Earth, and they find aliens there. And one of the middle books has a picture of pastel horses, flying up through the sky on an elfin hunt. And that just struck me. And I read this when I was like 15, and yet it stuck in my head so strongly that it does shape the end of the book. And that's not a spoiler, so don't worry about it. Pink horses flying. No, I don't do pink flying horses. Okay, well, thank you very much. Now,
that's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.